Chapter 8. If this had been any other time in his life, Gavin could have taken the shock, absorbed it silently, and gone on to the next appointment of an overfull day. In every down moment he would have chewed through the surprise. He would have lain it down for 6 or 10 hours, not thinking about it at all, and then, passionless, he would pick up that shock late in the day and rationally decide what to do about it. But in this grey hell there was nowhere to go, nothing to do, nothing else to think of. Little to see except the expectant face of Maricia, like a loyal hound expecting a beating. Except not loyal. Nor a hound. Not a slave? Gavin asked. You clipped your own ears. Who would do such a thing? I was 18 years old when I came to serve you, Maricia said. But I had been deeply in love with you for 3 years already, though you'd never seen my face. From as early as I could remember, I'd heard tales from my friends, from my mother and my grandmother. Everyone knew about the perfect Guile brothers. Gavin wondered sometimes if he'd been so stupid when he was young that he hadn't seen how different his life was from everyone else's. But he and his brother had taken the affection and attention as their natural due, and his mother had muted people's more exuberant gestures skillfully. In many ways, he'd had no idea that not everyone grew up as cherished as he did. She went on. I didn't pay much attention to the False Prism's war. It was so far away from Blood Forest. I knew there was some horrible girl who was to blame for everything and that the fighting was awful. I thought you must be very brave. And then the war was over, settled in some distant land. And almost immediately the Blood War started up again. Tell me. Tell me everything. Give me it all. Maybe he could regain his equilibrium if he didn't have to speak for a while. She still couldn't meet his eye. My experience of the war was almost anticlimactic. My family was wiped out by pieces, and each time I was supposed to be at the places the raiders hit, and I simply wasn't. For me it was like my family disappeared slowly every time I turned my back. I never saw their bodies. I never felt the heat of the burning fields or touched the broken gates. I never smelled the forbidden magic still steaming in the air. A cousin would bring in a confirmation. He'd seen the bodies himself. There would be no ransom. There was no mistaking my sister's death, then my father's, then later my mother's. There was no false hope, but also never a chance to grieve. The land that had been taken from us was being held by enemies. There would be no visits to graves, no remembrance wreaths, no dirges or holy fires against Long Night. I was brought quietly to the Jaspers and found out that after I'd left, my cousins had been killed too. I decided I had been spared for a purpose. My grandmother Aurea was more distraught than I'd ever seen her, and then you came back from Wrath. You just ended the Blood War, which had been simmering for centuries. You simply ended it with a fatal wave of your hand. I think my grandmother had been about to move against you before that, but that changed her. She found a peace again. It was my idea, you know, me becoming your room slave. One day my grandmother spoke privately to your mother. Philia said you were dissatisfied with your current room slave, and she herself was unhappy because the woman was spying on you. So Aurea asked your mother if she might procure a girl for her. She said she'd give you an excellent room slave as a gift to make up for past friction. I was eavesdropping, and as your mother gave her the description of what she wanted for you, I realized it fit me perfectly. But to become a slave... It was the greatest fear for every family in power. Losing a war didn't mean becoming a tradesman. Nobles were either at the top, or reduced to death, or the most onerous servitude possible. I'd lost everything, Gavin. My family, our fortune, which wasn't large to begin with. The Pallar's power had dwindled since Olber Rathkor died. My grandmother refused to use the power of her office to help us unfairly. Her integrity was the slow ruin of us. Your father had some grudge against Ulber, and I think he orchestrated much of our downfall. The Seaborns had bled to seize our lands, so there was no way they were going to simply give them back to anyone, certainly not to an 18-year-old girl with no army or fortune. The Seaborns? Yes. And yes, Brarach Seaborn did recognize me. He shouldn't have. We'd never met. But he'd known my sister, and the resemblance was strong. Strong enough, apparently. I don't know if he killed her himself or if he merely allowed her murder, but I goaded him into hitting me. I knew your vengeance would be swift and terrible. I thought you loved me. It was the first and last time I manipulated you. I'm sorry. It was the only way I could see to get vengeance for my family. I had no idea how far things would go.
Gavin had killed Braddock Seaborn for beating Mauricia and put his head on a pike. The Seaborns had eventually sided with pirates to get vengeance on the Giles for that. Almost all of them had ended up hanged and their lands seized, all from one slave's lie. Having known Mauricia always as his own property, Gavin had trusted her to act in good faith, which to him had meant in his interests. After she'd passed his trials of her faithfulness against the White, Mauricia had become, in Gavin's view, an extension of his own will. Instead, her own secrets had led to lies, and lies to death. It wasn't as if she were the only one. He'd made his own choices, and the Seaborns had too. What did it matter now? But Mauricia, a slave? He couldn't get past that. My grandmother couldn't intervene for me in the satrapy's politics, or wouldn't. The White is supposed to be above politics, and things were so tenuous here. My prospects were limited. I'd been trained to run a large household, to manage slaves and servants, to see the proper protocols were observed, to check the books but not to keep them myself, to see that animals were properly tended but not to do the tending, to check that the cooks were performing well but not to cook myself. I knew a little of everything but was master of nothing. I was useful as a chatelaine, but useless for all else. Of course I was a fool for thinking that. One who can learn so much by 18 can easily learn more, but I knew I would never have my dream. I would never be that high lady with 6 or 8 children embracing her, which had been all I ever wanted. So I volunteered. I knew I had been saved for some great purpose, and what could be higher than serving the greatest prism of all time, Gavin Gyle? They told me that if you accepted me, I would be with you for years, maybe many years if I did well. It was almost a marriage to a desperate, foolish heart like mine. Indeed, anyone who married a prism would know her marriage would likely last only 7 years. Gavin had been with Mauricia for more than 10. My grandmother was desperate, and I solved so many problems for her, but she never forgave herself for letting the blacksmith clip my ears, because the moment he cut, our course was set. Here, Gavin thought he'd tried the most insane gambit possible to save himself in the fallout of the Civil War. He felt numb. Mauricia, a pullor. It wasn't a bad life, she said. What? I served the 7 satrapies. I got to see my grandmother, whom I had always loved dearly, almost daily. I wouldn't have seen her ever if I'd had my old dream. She would have been here, and I would have been off somewhere paired with some fool or other who wasn't half my equal. That's what Grandmother said when she was trying to look on the light side. And I got to be with you, and you loved me after your way, didn't you? Not quite in the way I thought you did early on, but you cared for me. There was something plaintive in how she said it, as if she couldn't bear to make it a question, but wanted to know the answer more than anything. Not stupid, Mauricia. Of course she'd seen through that lie eventually. She, who was closer to him than anyone, had eventually realized what being a slave meant. It wanted to break down in horror for what she'd done, for who he'd become. But if he did, the orange in him knew she would come comfort him. He, who had hurt her, would take from her even comfort. Gavin had once thought his father a fool because the old man had been so close to Gavin and had never seen him for what he was. He himself had been closer still to Mauricia and had never seen her at all. It was a bitter mirror to hold. Mauricia, I did. But his pause, the very pause he'd taken because he'd been trying to be fair to her, was too long. She took it as a negative. She swallowed and interrupted.
My lord, it was an honour to serve you, but not one I would repeat, given the choice.
He squeezed his eyes tight shut, and pain lanced through his left eye. Mauricia, please,
don't lie to me now, my lord.
I loved you as a master loves his best slave. I was well pleased, but I took it as my due. I never saw you, Mauricia. And that says nothing about you, and everything about me. She took it like a slap in the face, but after a moment she breathed.
Truth from Gavin Gyle. I should thank you for that.
He was not exactly Gavin Gyle either, but that was a confession too far afield. Mauricia, You did more for me than anyone. I owe you more than I can ever repay. But I have nothing to give you for all you've sacrificed for me.
Then see me now.
He looked at her, unsure what she meant.
Talk to me. Talk to me like I'm a free woman, like I'm your friend, like I'm here.
And so they talked. They talked of people they had known. They talked of Maricia's childhood and her family and of her grandmother. Maricia shared stories Gavin had never heard of the old woman, and not just of her. Maricia told him of intrigues in the Cromeria he had never even guessed at. She told him about times he'd almost caught her spying for her grandmother. Something tight in Gavin's chest loosened. Despite their situation, they laughed. For once, Gavin imitated his mother rather than his father, and asked questions rather than giving commands. As Maricia spoke and Gavin listened, she became more animated than he had seen her in years. She glowed beautifully, unmissable. Yet Gavin had missed her. He saw her now. And though time had no meaning down here, and the grey light never varied, they spoke what must have been long into the night. Finally she stood and stripped off her slave's dress, leaving only her shift. She crawled up onto his narrow convalescence palanquin. He had a bad feeling, but she merely draped her dress over the two of them as a makeshift blanket. There was no way he could deny her the comfort of his arms, and he needed the warmth. She snuggled against him, and soon fell asleep. His left arm was around her with its two lopped-off fingers. His left eye was toward her, blind and seeping. He was a cripple in the prison he himself had constructed, and he was holding the wrong woman. "I'm sorry," he whispered to this woman who had lived and would die for him. "I'm so, so sorry." But for this cold night, he cuddled close to her and thought of his wife. "Caris, will I ever see you again?"